Well, see, we are continuing Yemirtz Hashem today with Daf Mem. We are beginning by thanking all of our sponsors, to thank our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Kislev. Josh and Becca Friedman for dedicating all the Shulman Drashos of this month, Ignatian of the Yahrzeit of Josh's father, Yisrael Yehuda ben Harav Chaim Raphael, for an aliyah for the neshamas of all of those who died al Kiddush Hashem on Shmini Atzeres and Simchas Torah, and for a safe return for all of our hostages and Chayalim. Sammy and Malka Esterson, for dedicating all the Shulman Drashos this month in memory of their parents, Hinda Bas Hanach Ephraim, Yitzchok Lee ben Aaron HaKohen, and Sarah Rachel Bas Baruch Avram, and the Pepper family in memory of our brother and uncle, Yosef Pepper, Yosef David ben Yaakov Zichron Lebrach. And of course, as a shir, we dedicate all of Maseches Baba Kamo in memory of Master Sergeant Eliyahu Michal Harush, Hashem Yikom Damo. Well, so with that, let us begin. So we have an incredible daf out of us today. Today's daf is Daf Mem 40. And we are picking up in Yiras Hashem on Lamed Tesma Beis 39b, three lines up from the bottom. So if you remember again, we left off in the number of a number of sugyas. Namely, again, number one, halacha lemaisa. What do we do if? Well, actually, what do we do if, let's say, you have the shar of a chere shot of a cotton, or if you summon, for that matter, does Beis Din? So obviously, there's no liability for those individuals. Does Beis Din go ahead and create or set up an apotropis or not? If the answer is yes, at what point during time, during muad, for a muad where it's nazik shalim, who's paying that? Is it the apotropis? Isn't the yisomim? And then, of course, the last piece that we were introduced to yesterday, which we're going to continue to kind of focus on that a little bit, is this idea of rishus mishana. Ultimately, again, does a change of domain ultimately go ahead and kind of reset things for the shars? In other words, let's say a shar that became a muad in one domain, ultimately, again, can it revert back ultimately to its previous status, later on? Okay, fine. So let's go weiter over here. So I'm trying to figure whether or not to do the halacha lemaisa now, or okay. So let's go. Says the Gemara. Sorry, a lot to do. I'm going to do Ravacha Barabel Ravina. So Ravacha, so three lines up from the bottom. Lamed Tav Sameis 39b. So I'm going to do Ravacha Barabel Ravina. Rabbi Shlomo Abai, the Amar Pligi. So according to Abai, who said ultimately, again, that it's a machlokes that we saw in yesterday's Gemara as Shapir, then the previous statement, we're continuing from the conversation from yesterday, makes sense. El Rav the Amar Lo Pligi, but according to Rav, who says that there is not a machlokes, Ademuki la b'muad, instead of setting up the case as a muad, again, this is all just a continuation from yesterday's daf, nukma b'tam, set it up as a case of dealing with tam, top of mem 40a, iv Rabbi Yehuda, so again, if you want to send it up in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, so da avidei shmira p'chusa, da avidei shmira m'ula, according to Rabbi Yehuda, you can set it up as a case where the shomer only watched the shar, what we call the shmira p'chusa, a minimal, we call it a minimal shmira, and did not do a proper shmira. Either Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov to lo avidei shmira klal. According to Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov, you can set it up where the shomer did not perform a shmira at all. Disanya, because we learned three lines down from the top on Mem Amud Aleph 48. Disanya, Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov Omer, echad tam v'echad muad sheshamar shmira pechusa. Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov says, when you watch a tam or a muad, if you go ahead and you give them, you provide for them a minimal shmira, pturin. Ultimately, again, that's enough. We'll explore this in greater depth. But Rabbi Lazar ben Yaakov's position is that as long as you provide a minimal shmira, a minimal guarding for the animal, ultimately, again, that is enough. Says Imar of Aiva, Hakamash Molan of Yaakov, Dema Amidan Le Apetropin, Litan, Ligvos Migufo. But yeah, but we learned from Quench of Yaakov that ultimately, again, sorry, that we go ahead and we provide an apotropis for a tam. In other words, even if for a tam animal, you even set up an apotropis, and remember again, that will allow you to collect chatzi nezek migufa from the body of the animal. What he means to say is, I'm really saying one thing, but the one thing I'm saying ultimately has two dimensions of reasoning. Fine, that's supposed to say, so that's ultimately, again, how Abai would understand it. Ravina Amar, Ravina says, Rishus Mishana Ikebena. The fundamental dispute is whether or not the change of domain resets the animal's status or not. Kigon Dahava Muad. So what would be the example? The example would be, let's say again, you have the shar of a cheresh, a shota, a katan, and then what happens? So the shor becomes a muad. The chirish is healed. The shtafa shota. The shota becomes sane, and the katan becomes an adult. So now, what happens when there is a change of status of the owner? So Rabbi Huda suffer hari lubeches kaso. Rabbi Huda says ultimately, again, the animal remains as it is; its status does not change. And Rabbi Yaakov says no. That ultimately, when the owner changes, ultimately, the status of the animal changes as well. So let's pause here for just a moment. So now is a good opportunity to kind of catch up on a little bit of the halacha l'maisa. So first of all, the Rambam in Hilchos Nizkei Mamon, Perek Vav, and this is pretty much from the beginning of this chapter, really through halacha vav. So essentially, just to kind of consolidate the halachas. Number one, we paskin that when you have the shor of a chereish shote v'katan, Beis Din does appoint an apotropos. And Beis Din will even appoint an apotropos when the animal is a tam. So that's number one. So that's how we paskin animal is a tam. Now remember, for tam damages, it's chatzi nezek, half damages, and it's payable from the body of the animal. Fine. So now what happens if that animal becomes a muad, again, under the watch of the apotropos? So the Rambam paskins that, remember, for a muad, you have to pay nezek shalim, complete damages, min aliyah, from the best property. Who's paying that? The Rambam paskins, the apotropos is paying that. The Rambam then says that after the apotropos pays it, he has the ability to settle up, quote-unquote, with the estate, whoever that is, the estate of the chere shot of a cotton, and recapture what he paid from them. So it has to come out of his pocket, but he has the ability to recapture it. What about this idea of Rishus Mishana? What about a change of domain? Where, let's say, again, we're going to see this in a couple of different ways, but we're going to see this again right now. You have a situation where, let's say, the shor belongs to a chereish shot of a cotton. So now there's an apotropos. The animal is either a tam or a muad. Let's say the animal becomes a muad. Then what happens? The cotton becomes a gadol. The shot that becomes sane. The chereish is now hearing and speaking. So now that the owner has experienced a change, does that change impact the animal? So the Rambam paskins, this is in Perek Vav, in Halacha Vav, he says, Shor shor v'nimkar, oni t'matana, chazor l'tamuso, sharashos nishtenistanish mishanes mishana dino. So this is interesting. Whenever an animal changes domain, its status is reset. So the way that Rambam actually discusses this, and we're going to see this in just a little bit, that halacha l'maisa, that a change in domain ultimately resets the status of the animal. But the way that Rambam understands it is, it has to be a real change in domain. For example, Reuven has a muad animal that he sells to Shimon. When he sells that to Shimon, ultimately, again, now that animal is a tam once again. But it really only applies in an actual change of domain. If there's a change of status of the owner, right? The gadol becomes a katan. The chereish is now hearing and speaking. The shot is now saying, the Rambam paskins that halacha l'maisa, that does not change the status of the animal. The status remains. Same thing we're going to see in the next sugya, where, let's say, again, I give my animal to a shomer, and underneath the guidance or the watch or lack of watching of the shomer, the animal becomes a muad. When the shomer returns it to me, that animal does not return back to a tam state. So it's only when the animal actually changes domain that ultimately the status is reset to the status of a tam. But again, I'm skipping ahead a little bit to future sugyas. But that's how you pass in all three of those areas. Let's go back there. Tan Rabbanon. Apotropos mishamim min haliyah. So remember again, as we said before, an apotropos who is watching the animal, let's say, for a chereish shot of a katan, for yisomim, and the animal becomes a tam, so the apotropos is going to be chayv to pay nezek shalim from his own property. Ve'im mishamim kofar. But this is interesting, an apotropos does not pay kofar. So let's say again, the apotropos is watching the shor on behalf of the owner, and then what occurs? The shor kills someone. So halacha l'maisa, the owner does not pay, excuse me, the apotropos does not pay kofar. Why not? So the Gemara says, Man tana kufra kapara v'yasmi lav b'nei kapara ninu. So bepashtas, it must be because kofar is an atonement payment. And in this case of an apotropis, who's watching it for the Yisomim. Yisomim, again, they're not subject to the laws of atonement. They don't need the atonement. In other words, in general, Yisomim are shielded from liability. So therefore, again, kofar is an atonement payment. The owners of the Yisomim are the Yisomim, and therefore they don't need kapara, so to speak. So who is the opinion who says that the kofar payment is an atonement payment? It's Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. Or actually, I'm sorry, it's Rabbi Shmuel, the son of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka. So the Gemara says, Disanya v'nasan pinyon nafsho. So the pasuk says, if my shor kills someone, chas v'shalom, I have to pay pinyon nafsho, atonement for my soul. Demei nizak. So ultimately, again, this is the value of the damaged party. Rabbi Shmuel of Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, Omer Rabbi Shmuel says, demei mazik. No, you have to pay the value ultimately of the damager, not the damaged party, the damager. My love, the Hakamithlis, what are they arguing about? The Rabbanan Savi, the Rabbanan hold Kofra Mamonahu, the Rabbanan hold that Kofra is a monetary payment. So because Kofra is a monetary payment, therefore what? Therefore it's based on the damages to the damaged party. On the other hand, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Savar Kofra, Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Savar, Rabbi Shmuel holds Kofra Kapara, that no, Kofra is an atonement payment. So because it's an atonement payment, therefore what? Who is it atoning for? The damager. Therefore, the amount paid is the value or the we'll call it the amount, yeah, the value of the damager. So this is the machlokas. Well, this fundamental machlokas is kofar considered to be like payment of damages, mamon, or is kofar considered to be kapara? Machlokas. Amar Papa says, no, it's not a machlokas. The chuli ama kofra kapara, who everyone agrees that kofar is an atonement payment. The Hachabak Mephis, here's what they're arguing about. Rabbanan Savri Bidden Nizak Shaimina. The Rabbanan hold that no, and everyone agrees that Kofar, excuse me, is a Kapara. So what's the Machlokes? The Machlokes is how you value the payment. Rabbanan hold that we value it based on the Nizak, the damaged party. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka Savra Bidden Mazik Shaimina. Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Shmuel holds that no, we evaluate it ultimately with the mazik, the damager. So it's interesting. What we thought was a machlokes as to whether or not kofar is just like compensatory damages or kapara, turns out everyone agrees it's kapara. It's just a machlokes how you're evaluating the kapara. Interesting. My time is Rabbanon. So what's the logic of the Rabbanon? Ne'emar shisa lamata, ve'ne'emar shisa lamata. It says shisa, which means literally, again, to place upon someone a monetary obligation. It says it above and it says it below. Ma lahalon b'dinizak, afkan b'dinizak. Just like before, and it's talking about the value of the damaged party. So to over here by kofar, we're going to value it at the value of the damaged party. Rabbi Shmuel ben Osh, Rabbi Yochanan ben Baroka, savar v'nasan pigyon nafsho. On the other hand, Rabbi Shmuel holds, the pasuk says, when speaking about kofar, you have to give an atonement for your soul. Which sounds like that what? That the value of the kofar payment is the value of the damager. For Rabbanon, in pinyon nafsho ksiv, it's true. It says pinyon nafsho, you have to pay kofar as an atonement for your soul. However, mihu ki shayminon bidinizak shayminon. Nevertheless, when we evaluate what you're paying, you're going to pay based on the value of the nizak, of the damaged party. See, interesting. Okay, so the point over here is just fundamental machlokes. What is kofar? What is kofar? So now the Gemara seems to say everyone agrees. So remember, this is kofar is a specific case where my ox kills someone. So if my ox kills someone, everyone's going to agree this kofar. What is kofar? Kofar is payment for atonement. The machlokes is how you evaluate kofar payment. Is kofar payment based on the value of the damager? Or ultimately, again, the damaged party. That's the machlokes. Beautiful Gemara here. Meshavach, Meshavach li Rava the Rav Nachman with Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, the Adam Gadolhu. Rava was telling Rav Nachman, right, was telling Rav Nachman that Rav Acha Bar Yaakov is a great man. Okay. Amar Leis Rav Nachman said, good. L'chishiyav aliyadcha hevi aliyadi. Do me a favor. When he comes to visit you, bring him to visit me. I want to meet this guy. You're saying that this man, Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, is so great. So Rav Nachman says, good, when he comes to you, bring him to visit me. Ki asa lagabe, so when Rav Nachman came to visit Rava, so I'm sorry, when Rav Acha Bar Yaakov came to visit Rava, Amrele. Let me say this again. Rava was talking to Rav Nachman, and Rava said to Rav Nachman, this man, Rav Achar Bar Yaakov, is a great man. Rav Nachman said, great. The next time Rav Achar Bar Yaakov comes to visit, bring him to me. So now the Gemara says, Rav Achar Bar Yaakov comes to meet Rav Nachman. So the Gemara says, Kiyasa Legabe Amrele, by my name Ilsa. So Rav Nachman says to him, okay, ask me a question. Rav Achar Bar Yaakov, you're such a great man, ask me a question. So by my name, Rav Achar Bar Yaakov asked the following Shaila. Shor shal shnei shotvin, if you have an ox that is owned by two partners, ketzad mishalmin kofar. How do you pay kofar? So let's say Reuven and Shimon own an ox together, and the ox kills Levi. So how do you pay kofar? So the Gemara says, mishalim hai kofar v'hai kofar. Kofar echon am rachmana. So does Reuven pay his own kofar payment, and Shimon pays his own kofar payment? There's only one problem. The Torah only obligates one kofar payment. Okay. V'lo shnei kofarin, hai chatzi kofar v'hai chatzi kofar. So maybe we should say, Reuven, you should pay 50% of the kofar, and Shimon, you should pay 50% of the kofar. Here's the problem. Kofar shalim am rachmana v'lo chatzi kofar. There's no liability, the liability for kofar is 100%. There's no such thing as partial liability for kofar. See, here the kasha, you have a shor owned by two people. The shor kills someone, kills a third party. So now, how do you pay kofar? So to obligate both of the owners to pay full kofar, the Torah only obligates one kofar per act of bloodshed done by the ox. Have each of them pay half kofar, 50%. There's no such thing as half kofar liability. Kofar is either full liability or none. So what do you do? So the Gemara says, Adiyasa v'kame ayinba. So now Rav Nachman he's trying to find the answer to this. So as he's trying to find the answer, Amrlei, Rav Achar Bar Yaakov asked him another question. Tanan, chai ve'erchin memashkinin osan, chai v'chatoz v'ashamos ein memashkinin osan. This is an interesting point there. The Gemara says as follows, we learned. If a person makes an erech vow, now an erech vow means a person says, erech yalai, I hereby pledge my value to the Beis HaMikdash, and the Torah sets objective values for different ages, for different genders, you have to pay that. So now the Gemara asks an interesting question. So now the Gemara says, if a person makes an erech vow to the Beis HaMikdash, the Beis HaMikdash could seize collateral from the vower in an effort to ensure that they pay their erech vow. Yet, interestingly enough, if someone is chayv a chatas or an asham, a sin offering, so the Beis HaMikdash does not take collateral. Now, why the distinction? So what's interesting is as follows. Because, let's work backwards. A chatas and an asham, because it's for atonement, we assume people want kapara. It's beautiful, by the way. What do you say? People want kapara, right? What does a yid want deep down more than anything? What do I want more than anything? I want to be a baal tshuva. That's what I want more than anything. V'ani kirvas elokim litov. I just want to be close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's really, if you ask me, what do I want? Like David HaMelech says, achos sha'alti. Right? I have one request. One request. What's my one request? Shifti beveis Hashem koyimei chayai. So what does David HaMelech mean when he says, I want to dwell with HaKadosh Baruch Hu all the days of my life? It's simple. David HaMelech is saying is, I want to be a baal tshuva. That's what he's saying. To dwell with how does one dwell with Hashem? It's very simple. It's not simple. Simple to say it, not simple to do it. If I want to dwell with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that means I want to be a baal tshuva. I want to have a clean slate. I want to know that I've atoned for my averus. That's it. That's the achos sha'alti. Shifti beveis Hashem means I want to be in a spiritual state where I am capable of residing in close proximity to the Ribono Shel Olam. And how does one do that? By becoming a baal tshuva. So therefore, when one is chayv echatas or an asham, there is no need for the Beis HaMikdash to seize collateral. Why? Because the automatic assumption is a person is going to fulfill other obligations. Why? Because I want to be a baal tshuva. Because I want shifti b'veis Hashem. When a person makes an erech vow, so again, there's no atonement involved in that. So therefore, there's a fear of delay. Because there's a fear of delay, Beis Din will go ahead and seize collateral. So now ask Rav Achar Bar Yaakov, what about chayve kofrin? What about kofar? So what about if Reuven owns an ox, his ox killed Shimon, now he has to pay a kofar payment. Do we seize collateral? Do we seize collateral in order to ensure that he brings his kofar payment, or he gives his kofar payment? My, kevan de kaparuhu kichatas va'asham dami, machmir chamra ilu yevelo bay mashkune. So on one end we can say, look, kofar is atonement. So like a chatas and an asham, ultimately, again, a person wants kapara, wants atonement. Therefore, we don't have to seize collateral. By the way, I just want to be clear. When we talk about seizing collateral by kofar, that obviously is not the Beis HaMikdash, because kofar payment gets paid to the family of the victim. So it would mean, would Beis Din step in and seize collateral? So on one hand, we could say, since kofar is for atonement, we've clearly created a model where for atonement purposes, you don't have to seize collateral, because halacha l'maisa, people want atonement. People want atonement. Okay. So now the Gemara says, first wide line of the intermediate lines, but the other possibility is kevan de chabrehu debay misvale mamonahu velo legavahu velo chamrele ubay mashkune. Says into this. On the other hand, kofar doesn't get paid to the Beis HaMikdash. Kofar gets paid to another person. So even though it's for atonement, maybe again the damager, right, or in this case again the person who's chayv the kofar will be delinquent in paying. In other words, when does a person zariz, so to speak, alacritus, and pays off their atonement payments, that's what's due to the Beis HaMikdash. But this is due to another person, so maybe a person will take their time in going ahead and paying it off. And therefore, we should take collateral. Ubay mashkune inami kevan duhu lo chata umamone hu da'azik lo chamer milsi luye ba mashkune. On the other hand, maybe also over here, since it's not Reuven who did anything wrong, so to speak, but it's Ishar who killed someone, maybe once again, even though it's kapara, he'll be delinquent in ultimately delivering the money, and therefore we should seize collateral. So we'll say, so these are all the questions that Rav Acha bar Yaakov is peppering Rav Nachman with. So Rav Nachman says, Shavkon, leave me alone, istagir bekamaisa. I'm still dealing with your first question, right? I'm still dealing with your first question. In other words, remember again, Rav Acha bar Yaakov asked Rav Nachman two questions. Question number one, ultimately, was if you have a shard that is owned by two owners, what do they do in terms of kofar? Then question number two, ultimately was that for kofar payment, does Beis Din seize collateral in order to ensure that the person pays the kofar or not? So Rav Acha bar Yaakov asked these questions in rapid succession. Rav Nachman bar Yaakov says, essentially, stop. I'm still dealing with the first question. Let me go ahead and deal with the first question before I get to the second one. So interesting enough, in this exchange, Sa'alocha l'maisa, Rav Nachman didn't seem to answer either of them. What is the halacha? So first of all, the Rambam paskins is that when you have a shard that is owned by two owners, and that shard, right, Reuven and Shimon own a shard, the shard kills Levi, both Reuven and Shimon are obligated to go and pay kofar. That's number one. Two kofar payments, two 100% kofar payments for Reuven and for Shimon. That's number one. And halacha l'maisa, number two, the Rambam also paskins that Beis Din does seize collateral. If there's a concern that the person is not going to pay the kofar payment, Beis Din does seize collateral in order to ensure that the person goes in and satisfies this obligation. We also paskin that kofar is a kapara, that it is an atonement payment, and ultimately, again, not a mamon, just not simple compensatory damages. Incredible. Let's go by to Tan Rabbanon. Shalu b'cheskastam. So we'll say now we're going to begin a braisa, which we're going to state, and then Emirat Hashem dissect over the course of the remainder of this daf, into tomorrow's daf, and even a little bit into the rest of today's daf, and even a little bit into tomorrow's daf. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, Tan Rabbanon, shalu b'cheskastam v'nim tzamua. Interesting case. I borrow an ox from Reuven. Right? I'm a shawl, a borrower. I borrow an ox from Reuven, and I borrow it from him, assuming that it's a tan. In the chazaka that it's a tam, and it turns out that it's a muad, and it does damage while I have it. So what's the halacha? The owner has to pay, Reuven has to pay half damages, and I have to pay half damages. Okay, huad the vase shoel. What happens if I borrow the ox from Reuven, and it's a tam, and then it becomes a muad under my watch, v'chzira l'baylim, and then I return the animal back to Reuven, and then the animal damages. So baylim mishal min chatzi nezek v'shal pater miklum. So the owner has to pay half damages, and I the borrower, and pater from everything. Again, we'll dissect all of these cases. So Amar Mar, so let's analyze. Shalu b'ches kastam v'nim samuad, baylim mishal min chatzi nezek v'shal chatzi nezek. So we'll say, first white line, first of the last three lines in the bottom. So remember again, let's look at the first case of the Braisa. I borrow a shar from Reuven, assuming that the shar is a tam. It turns out that the shar is a muad. It was a muad already when I got it. So what's talocha? Now, while I have it, it does damage. So what's talocha? I pay half damages and the owner pays half damages. Va'amai. But why? Le'ma le Tura she'ili, are you lo she'ili? Why can't I say like this? You know what? Hey, Ruvain, I barred an ox, not a lion, which is another way of saying I barred a tame animal, not a mu'ad animal. So therefore, why should I as a bar be liable at all? What I wanted to borrow, I did not get. What's going on over here? Amarav, hachamai askinon, what's the case here? Shehikir bo shehu nagchon. Ultimately, again, I will say, it's the case where I recognized even before I borrowed it that this is a lebedig ox, right? It's a nakhon, it's a gore. That even though I didn't know for say that it was a muad, I recognized that it had these tendencies, that it had this type of aggressive behavior. Still, at the end of the day, I borrowed the animal thinking that it was a tam, not a muad, so why should I be liable at all? Mishum da amrle sof sof itam hava palganiska by shlume hashtanami zil shalim palganiska. Simple. Because listen to this. Remember, what's the halacha? I barred a shar thinking that it was a tam. It turns out that then it was a muad. It does damage. So what does the braisa say? I, the borrower, pay half damages, and the owner pay half damages. So now I go back to the owner. I say, owner, but 1 second, I thought I was getting a tam, not a muad. So it's fine. If it was a tam, you'd pay half damages. So now I'm also only asking you for half damages. Remember, again, I only have to pay 50%. So essentially, it's the same financial liability. Either way, I'm paying half damages. So the Gemara said, 1 second, I could say back, v'nimalei, itam hava mishtalim begufo. But I could say, listen, it's true, I've been half damages, but remember, again, it's half damages from the body of the damaging animal. In other words, you sell off the animal, you give 50% of the proceeds, and that's it. Damalei, sof, sof, at lav, Torah, tura, bois, shlomi, lididi. But still, Ravik could say to me, that's fine. And if you would have sold off the animal and paid 50% from the body of the animal, you, Shmuel Silber, would still be obligated to give me, Ruvain, back an ox. You barred an ox, you have to return an ox. V'neimalei. So why can't I still say it in Rose? Omid Beis, Memet 40b, Imtam, Havamodina Umeftarina. Oh. So I guess like this. But 1 second, if I knew it was a tam, right, I thought it was a tam. And therefore, when it damages, this chasinezek. Chasinezek is a knas. It's a penalty payment. What's the halacha by knas? Mode biknas pater. If you admit that you owe a knas, you could pater yourself from the knas. I could have gotten myself out of this. And even according to the opinion that says chatzinezek is mamon, that it's not a knas. Namele, I could say itamhu hava maarikna leila agma. I could have said, you know what? I would have gone ahead and I would have hid the ox in the marsh. In other words, I would have removed the ox. And if the ox is hidden away, there's no real way to collect damages. What's the case over here? The case over here is where Beis Din already, right, the ox did damage and Beis Din seized the asset. Beis Din seized the ox. If that's the case, again, then maybe the owners should be exempt from their 50%. After all, Nemale, at v'se l'turai biada. Man delo matzin l'ashtuye b'dina b'hadi. Right? Ruvain could say to me, listen, now you're liable, Silber, because now someone has seized the ox, and I no longer have the ability to litigate my claim. In other words, before the ox was seized, so there could be an argument about what happened over here. Now Beis Din seized the ox, I have no recourse against that. So maybe again, the owner Ruvain should be exempted from his 50%. Mishum d'amrlei, iha drisa nehilach, lab minach havashachli. Because I could say, I, the shul, could say, 1 second, Ruvain, and had I returned the ox to you, Beis Din could have seized it just as easily from you. I have a name alay, but why can't Ruvain say, it's true. Had you returned it to me, Ruvain says, I could have hid it in the marsh. In other words, I could have hidden the asset. Mishum da amrle sof sof lav ma'aliya hava mishtami. Because I could say back to Ruvain, that's fine. And if there would have been no ox, so Beis Din would have collected from the rest of your assets. So hanicha hecha de isle nechase. That's fine if the owner, Ruvain, had other assets. Hecha de lesne nechase ma'ika lemeimar. But if Ruvain didn't have any other assets, what is there to say? Mishum da amrle ki hecha de mishtabna lididach hacha nami mishtabna lehech. Because I could say at the end of the day, I could say, Ruvain, as much as I am obligated to you, I am just as obligated to the party that the ox did the damage to. In other words, I'm borrowing the ox from Ruvain. The ox, when it was under my domain, did damage to Shimon. So I say to Ruvain, the same way I owe you an ox, I also have liability towards Shimon. And the Baal Seid, the Gemara says, how can I be Shalach? Mid Rabbi Nasan, the son Rabbi Nasan, Rabbi Nasan says, this is the famous Shibuda de Rab Nasan. Shibuda de Rab Nasan is like this. If A lent money to B, and B lent money to C, A could go ahead and collect directly from C. You give to who you are liable. So the same idea over here is, so I'm saying to Reuven, you know, whether the ox is in my domain, your domain, someone is going to owe Shimon money. Someone's going to owe Shimon money. See, even returning it back to you would not really have made any difference. Okay, so if Rabbi said, this is the first case. This is the first case in the Braisa, right? And ultimately, again, the case in the Braisa, so again, I borrowed an ox thinking it was a tam. It turns out that it's a muad. It does damage while it's under my domain, while I'm borrowing it. So what's the halacha? The borrower pay 50% and the owners pay 50%. Now, the way the Gemara is setting this up is, I didn't know the animal was a muad, but I didn't know the animal was a shtickle aggressive. So because of that, again, essentially, my responsibility is still capped at 50%. So my exposure is not really all that more. In other words, I would have paid chatzi nezek for if it was a ton and did damage. And I also have to pay chatzi nezek. Okay, you're right, it's a little bit different over here because my chatzi nezek, again, is going to be just straight 50% damages and may not necessarily come from the body of the animal. But again, from a liability perspective, I'm paying the same chatzi nezek. Okay, interesting case. Next case. Huad bebeis shoel. So remember again, I'm going through the rest of the braisa. Huad bebeis shoel vechzir lebailim. So now here's what happened. I borrowed a tam ox from Reuven. While I borrowed it, it became a muad. So what's the halacha? So now we'll say, and after I turn it to the bailim, after I turn it to the owner, ultimately now it does damage. So what's the halacha? The owners go ahead and only have to pay chatzi nezek, and I am exempt from anything. Okay, so we'll say, so what's the pshat? Now, it seems to be sefer rushos mishana. So we'll say, what seems to be happening over here is that halacha lemaisa, once I return the ox to the owner, either bar turned, so now there's a shinui rushos, there's a change of domain. And it sounds like what? When there is a change of domain, that resets the status of the ox. So although the ox became a muad under me, when I returned it back to the owner, it's now once again a tam. So therefore, once I give it back to Reuven, now when it does damage, Reuven is chayiv chatzi nezek, like a tam, and I am totally exempt. So interesting enough, seifa rishos mishana, reisha rishos ein mishana. Now what's interesting about say is, yet the first case, what was the first case? I got an animal from Reuven. I thought it was a tam. It turns out it's a muad. And now the animal does damage. What's the halacha? I pay 50%, Reuven pays 50%. Yet we don't say that what? That when Reuven lends the animal to me, suddenly again, Rishus Mishana, right? Change of domain, the clock, so the status is reset. So it's interesting. In the first case, the status is not reset. In the second case, the sefer that we just read, where it becomes a muad under me, and now I give it back to the owner, the status is reset. So what's going on? I'm Rav Yochanan. You're right. Tavro. Misha Shanazu Lo Shanazu. Two different authors of two different statements in the Braisa. Interesting. Rabba Amar, no. Midresha Rishosein Mishana. Seifa Nami Rishosein Mishana. No, Rabba disagrees. Rabba says no. In both cases hold that a change of domain does not reset the status of the animal. I say, how do you reconcile the cases? The Seifa Hainu Taima Mishum Do Amar Le Lav Kol Kaminach Demiya Edes Le Liturai. So what's happening in the Seifa? So what is interesting, in the Seifa, ultimately, Reuven could tell me, you have no right to make my animal a muad. In other words, my animal is not a muad. Reuven says to me, I, Silber, did not exercise proper caution when looking after the shor. And therefore, again, it's a failure ultimately, again, in me, the shoel, in me, the borrower. But ultimately, again, I don't have the right because I had a lapse in duty to make the animal into a muad. Okay. Rav Papa says, me, the Sefer Roshos Mishana, Reish Nami Roshos Mishana. So we'll say, on the other hand, Rav Papa says, no, that Aloha Lamaisa, really we're going to paskin, that a change in domain does reset the status of the ox. It does reset the status of the ox. I. So what do you do with the resha? In other words, so both I say, therefore, the second case makes sense. Remember, what's happening in the second case? In the second case, again, Reuven lent me the ox. Under me, the ox became a muad. I give it back to Reuven. And now what does the Braisa say? Now the ox does damage. Reuven only has to pay chatzi nezek. Why? Because when I return the ox back to Reuven, the status of the ox is reset. Rishos Mishana. That makes sense. What do you do about the first case? Remember again, what happened in the first case? I borrowed an ox from Reuven, thinking it was a tam. In reality, it was a muad. Now the ox does damage. I have to pay half nezek, and Reuven has to pay half nezek. What do you see from there? That the status of the ox didn't reset. So how do you understand the resha? To which the Gemara says something very interesting. The Papa says it's different. Resha and utayim mishum dechomakum shahalach shem baylov alav. This is interesting. Rabbi said the Gemara says when Reuven lends me a shar, the shar doesn't become mine. The shar doesn't become mine. Rather, again, the owner's name still devolves upon the shar when it's being lent to me. So because of that, it's not really considered to be a change of domain when it comes from Reuven to me, which is interesting. So therefore, because of that, the clock doesn't reset. Yet the Gemara seems to entertain the possibility that after it's been mine for some amount of time and then I return it back, that is called the Shinui Rishos. So the Gemara seems to indicate over here that when an ox changes domain, its status is reset. So again, how does the Rambam paskin over here? So the Rambam says as follows. The Rambam says, this is in Hilchos Niske Mamun Parak Vav Halachavav. Shor Shuad Vinimkar Onite Mamatana Chazur LeTamuso Sharoshus Shenishtanis Mishanishmo. So I mentioned this before in passing, now we're going to read inside. So Rambam paskins that Halacha LeMaisa, when you do have a Shinui Rishos, when you have a change in domain, now change in domain, he is understanding over here that Reuven sold the shor to Shimon, or Reuven gave the shor as a gift to Shimon, when there's a real Shinui Rishos, ultimately again, Mishanadino, the status is reset. However, Avalim Hishilo, O Mastro the Shomer, Hariu Becheskaso. In every other case, whether again you're lending it to someone or you're giving it to a shomer, or in a case of apotropis, when the shark goes back to its original owner, right? Or even in a case where the shota becomes sane, or the katam becomes a gadol, those cases are not considered to be a resetting. That's not called Mishana Rishos. Or let's say a little bit differently. Mishana Rishos literally means it is actually changing titular ownership. Title is transferring to someone else. Reuven is selling it to Shimon. Reuven is gifting it to Shimon. But in all of these other cases where primary ownership remains in place, just someone else was managing the shor, even in the case of a borrower or a shomer or an apotropis, ultimately, again, the status of the shor is not reset when it goes back to its original owners. That's the halacha. That's going to be the halacha. Say the true in the case of a shomer, in the case of a shol, in the case of an apotropis. Only where there's an actual change of ownership does the status of the shor change. Well, say if you think about it, there's a tremendous Musar Haskil in this as well. You know, when a person commits an aveira, so what I'm doing is I'm placing myself under the reshus of the Yetzirah. That's what's happening, right? The person commits an aveira, I am under the domain, I'm under the ownership of the Yetzirah. The Bala Tanya writes this, spoke of this a couple of Shabbos ago, that when a person commits an aveira, like in that moment, they are Rasha Gomer. It's an incredible, incredible, profound statement. I commit an aveira, in that moment, I am complete Rasha. I'm under the domain of the Yetzirah. But something amazing happens. When I do a mitzvah, I'm a tzaddik gomer. I'm a complete tzaddik because I'm under the domain of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And what's amazing is incredible, which is going back all the line in our tshuva motif for the day. When a person does tshuva and removes themselves ultimately from the domain of the Yetzirah, and I place myself kivyachol under a new owner, right? Beforehand, the way I lived my life is I was owned by my lusts, by my desires, by my proclivities, by my wants. I was owned by the Yetzer Hara. Now I become a Baal Tshuva, and I choose to be owned by the Ribono Shel Olam. That's what I want. I want to be owned by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Something happens, which is amazing. What happens when you change ownership? What's the Lashon of the Rambam? When you change ownership, right? So, Sharishus Shenishtanis Mishanadino. When you change ownership, the slate is wiped clean. When you change ownership, ultimately, again, your status is reset. When you change ownership, you are no longer a muad. But once again, I've become a tam. Yaakov ish tam yoshev olim. Simple, pure, and pristine. And perhaps one could even accomplish this. It doesn't have to be in an actional sense, but it could even be in a cognitive sense as well. If a person says, hineni mucha lemezuman, I no longer want to be under the domain of the Yitzhara. I no longer want to be owned by the Yitzhara. I want to be owned by the Ribono Shel Olam. I am hereby transferring ownership of my personalistic self from the Sitra Achra, from the negative, from Chait, from the Yitzhara, and I'm hereby transferring ownership of myself, my personalistic self, to the Ribono Shel Olam. You could affect that level of change. Once you do that, like the Rambam says, once you say again, his lashon is once ultimately again, sharishus nishtanis mishanadino. Once you change ownership, your status changes as well. So I could do this in a moment. I could do it right now. I could do this right now. Just transfer ownership of myself from the Yitzhara to the Ribono Shel Olam. And once there is a change of ownership, by definition, the slate is fundamentally wiped clean. Incredible. Incredible. We'll say just one line in the next part that we'll have to stop for today. The Gemara says, Shara etzdadin en chayv misa. So we'll see. Remember again, the Mishnah mentioned the following idea. The Mishnah mentioned the concept that if you have like a shor that's like a gladiator shor, right? Like a shor fighter, right? They're trained for fighting, and that shor goes ahead and kills someone, then halacha l'maisa, what was the lashon of the Mishnah? Lashon of the Mishnah was shor ha'etzdadin enu chayv misa. Normally, if a shor kills someone, ultimately, again, the shor itself is put to death. But if it was a shor that was trained to kill, then ultimately, again, it's not put to death. Why? Pasuk said, ki yigach v'lo shigachuhu. Because the Pasuk's talking about a shor that exhibited aggressive behavior on its own, but not a shor that was trained to go ahead and exhibit aggressive behavior. So the Gemara just asks, Ibai Lahu. So fine, so you're not going to put the shor to death, but Ibai Lahu, mahu l'gabi mizbeach. Can you offer it up as a karban? So the Gemara says, Rav Amar Kasha, Rav says yes, Ushmuel Amar Pasul, Shmuel says no. Rav Amar Kasha, Rav says yes, Onosu. Because again, the animal didn't do anything wrong. The animal was conditioned, unfortunately, to fight. Ushmuel Amar Pasul, Hare Ne'avad Bo'aver. Shmuel says it's Pasul. Why? Because at the end of the day, commit Na'avera. It wasn't its fault. I understand it was conditioned, it was trained for this. But Lamais, it's still committed in Na'avera. And therefore, Alocha Lamaisa. Halacha l'maisa, you cannot use it as a karma. Rabbi, so we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up a Meretz Hashem with this machlokis tomorrow. Tremendous. Shkoyach afreilich and aralich to Gechanika to everyone. And such as chus to be able to learn with all of you. Have a great day.